Thank you for tuning in. My name is Nella, and welcome to my podcast, Ethereality. Today's guest is Jules. Her experience illustrates how spiraling the drain and losing everything, finding yourself at rock bottom, can be an opportunity. We just have to know where to look. Jules, thank you so much for being here. I am so excited to share your near-death experience story with my audience. Why don't you start from the beginning?
Well, I guess what I want to say, and it's important to understand this, is that kind of what led to this body riddled with ailments is the human experience prior. And I was a single mom with two beautiful, tiny little girls. And I met this man. He was on my baseball team. And we got engaged, and he was on his way to Arizona, and I was flying over there, and he was going to pick me up at the airport, and he got into a fatal car accident. And that was like my first real experience with loss. And I remember telling myself I couldn't grieve because my dad was diagnosed with inoperable cancer. I kind of held everything in. You know, this is hindsight now. I didn't know. Back then it was like, oh, well, I'm just going to toughen up and get through life. And in doing so, I pushed everything down. I pushed all my emotions, everything down. And then my dad died. And then shortly after, my neighbor, who was my godfather, also died. So that was three losses within 10 months. And it's important to say that because back then, with the understanding that I had of life and the way our human experience is, it's just, you just suck it up and you get through life. And not knowing, I started spiraling down. I started getting sick. I started out with these, you know, gastrointestinal problems, these issues. And then I got a doctor for that. And then I had pain all over my physical body. And then I had a doctor for that. And then, of course, I had like emotional issues, I guess you could say. And then, of course, comes a doctor with that. And then my heart began to get bigger and bigger. I had hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And then I got a cardiologist, a specialist for that, who told me that it was imperative that I keep my stress level down because I could have a sudden cardiac death just like that. And so as a single mom, you know, trying to get through life, pushing all your emotions down, I got sicker and sicker and I spiraled down. I had an amazing job. I was an executive for a Forbes Fortune 100 company. But then 5 or 6 years down the line, down the road, I started downsizing, meaning like getting into a smaller home, a rental, then a room in a home. And then I found myself homeless in a tent site in a campground in Washington State, out there off of Fidalgo Island. I was living there with my son, and he was 7 at the time. And I remember by that time, I had so many specialists for this one human body. I remember holding on to the steering wheel, and the windows were blocked off, and my cute little son, his feet couldn't even touch the floor. I just was like, God, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Please help me. And then there was a knock at my car door window, and I peeked out, and it was the state, because I could tell, Department of Social Health Services, and a police officer. And I thought, oh my gosh, I must be a really horrible person for them to send a police officer. And so I came out, and Seth came out of the car, excited to shake the hand of the police officer. And they pulled him away and talked to Seth. And then they told me that they were going to take my son. And so they took my son. Everything was confirmed. All the self-hatred, I found myself despicable, like hatred for myself just enveloped me. And then I remember I couldn't move my hands. Like my hands started to tighten up. If you've ever had a muscle cramp, it was like that, but all over my physical body. My awareness was there. I was fully aware, realizing this. And I was like, oh my gosh, is it happening? Is it happening? You know, am I dying? And then I fell to the ground. They had gone. And I fell to the ground. But the thing is, Nella, I kept falling. I kept falling into the ground and fell in there. And I remembered like everything that I tried to push down, everything that I tried to resist in life was still there. Everything that I tried to run away from, all the self-hatred, the labels, the names that I made up for myself. I tried to push those away through life. They were still there, like waiting to be seen. It got dark and I couldn't move, but I didn't realize the outside world sort of fell away and I fell into this inside world and I kept falling. And then I remember asking, am I dying? Did I die? And there was that voice, stop resisting what is. So then I don't know, like you turn towards something that you're so scared of, you just want to keep running from it. It's like out to get you. And then you stop and you turn, and it's not. There's no hatred there. It was just parts of myself. I call that my forever present ground zero. Parts of myself that want to be looked at, that want to be addressed, that want to be loved, that want to be enveloped. And so, in doing so, I can't explain. There are no words to explain what happened, but I fell even deeper into the cosmos. And then I became the cosmos. I became this like beautiful, see-through, starlit, humanoid type person, human. I don't know. And falling into it. And then I fell into the cosmos and then shot up as the cosmos. And then it was like I went through this, I don't know, this realm. And I'm in this. Only way I can call it is like this ocean of oneness, this void, this beautiful, oh, like everything looked like me, but it was one. It was one whole expression. Everything that ever was and ever will be was present. I knew exactly that there's life before life and that there's life after death. It's one cycle. It never ends. Because it's all one. Everything that ever was and ever will be is there, is present, the knowing, but there's nothing to contrast with it. So there is no experience. And so it began to move, and I say polarize, like express, extend out like fingers on my hand. Like if this is the oneness, there would be no experience because there's nothing to echo off of, because it's everything that ever was and ever will be. So it began to move and extend out. And these other, I call them electromagnetic plasma-like beings, like they were you, they were me. It's like these souls were being born out of this oneness, never separate, never ever separate, And I remember going, oh my gosh, they were like family, like long lost family. That were never separate from me, always part of me. And everything I like to say at that point, everything's happening in the hands of God. It was like God expressing out so that he may know himself. And via our human experience, via these expressions extending out of this oneness, we in turn enrich God. So this experience went on for I don't know how long, but it was the most amazing, amazing thing. It wasn't my time to go. I didn't see any long lost loved ones. I didn't see Jesus, but I saw like the beforeness, the void, if you will, that there's life before life and life after death. And we're here for a reason. You are here for a reason. There is no mistake. And so having that and understanding that this contrast that we experience, that very contrast, that very human experience is necessary. That is what I feared. That is what I ran from my entire life up until that day. And then opening my eyes on the forest floor, I could see energy around everything. Everything had this beautiful, like plasma-like energy, even rocks, even my car, not just what we would call living beings or sentient life, like a rock. And so I believe that everything is expressed from that source. There isn't anything that's separate. I saw life differently, and it was like such a gift. I didn't know at that point in my life that I had died until the doctors told me, until I had to prove to them that I was okay when I got to Hawaii. I had to tell them, and they said, you have scarring, major scarring all over your heart, which is indicative of a sudden cardiac death, but yet it's down to normal size and you're here alive. Looking back now, that day was a gift. Waking up on that forest floor was such a gift, and I want to share it from the mountaintops with everybody. And so moving forward, I started working on getting my son back. And it was a journey. It was a long journey. And so I did everything I could. My car became so organized. I found that, we are these beautiful expressions that fear life. We're these beautiful humans that fear our human experience. I just started gently sharing that, and I went to trial. We had a long trial, and in the middle of the trial, the judge had to recess because I got word that my daughter was in a fatal car accident. So she was 18, and she's amazing. She was going to Wazoo. That's where she was going to go, and she was actually going to go see Thomas Rhett when he was at the Gorge, and he dedicated a song to her.
Oh.
Yeah. So Sophia was in a fatal car accident. She's such a beautiful, beautiful soul. And the thing about it is, I remember at that moment, I knew that something was wrong. And I tried to like close my eyes and sense into this energy. And I kept coming back with something's wrong with Seth. My Seth is my son that they took. And then I, would sense into the energy and I come back with Seth. But the thing about it is that Seth, yes, he was in a very scary place in his physical human body, but Sophia was at peace. I kept coming back, and Sophia was at peace. She was now in the place that I just left. And so I know exactly where she is. And so I moved forward, had to go and plan her funeral. And I remember the day that they brought her back. It happened on Highway 90. I said, I'm going to go see her. And they said that that wasn't a very good idea because she had her window rolled down and the car rolled. And so she hit her head and she had transitioned instantly. And I was like, nobody's going to stop me. Nobody's going to stop me from seeing my daughter. And so I went and signed all these papers saying that I wouldn't sue the funeral home for what I experienced. And I saw her. And Nella, the whole room was glowing. It was like this pink, purple, translucent glow. And it was the most beautiful experience ever. And there she was laying on this table. And I was like, there she is. There's my baby. But we had this communication. I couldn't see her, but I could sense her like energy. I could sense her energy. Just like, it's like, Mom. And the words weren't phonetic. Wasn't verbal, like I had a download. And it was like, Mom, you need to share this. You need to share this. You need to help people. And the reason I went through everything that I went through is for this reason. So I can help people back to themselves. So I can help people honor their human experience and not be fearful. And so that's what we did. Hand in hand, physical and non-physical. We've continued on this journey together. And I had to die. I had to have that. I had to have all those ailments and I had to have sudden cardiac death in order for me to be here right now sharing this and not fear where my daughter is. It's a gift. And I'm crying because I can't wrap words around it. Don't fear life. There's life before life, and there's life after life. There's life after death. It's a cycle. We're here in this physical body because it is the grittiest. It's the most enriching. It's like the seed when it's planted in the earth, with all the dirt around it. That's like us. And everything that we experience here in this physical life is enriching humanity, whether we know it or not. And we're never alone. There's people that have transitioned. They might not be our relatives as we know them, but they're part of us and they're there with us and they walk with us and they guide us. So I continued to share as much as I could. The first time I ever spoke about this was at her memorial. And because of Thomas Rhett, there were 2,000 people there. It was one of those Christ the Kings, in the big, huge gymnasium. And so I couldn't see how many people. I could see that there are people standing at the, in the very end. And so I told them best I could. I didn't want to stand up there as a grieving mom. I wanted to stand up there as somebody who could tuck their hearts in and let them know that that they're never alone. Let them know that this life, they're meant to be here in the best way I could. I went to California after that and still worked on getting my son home. But the time I got to Hawaii, I planted roots here. I decided that this big island of Hawaii was my home. And so I went to get a doctor. And in doing so, I knew that they were going to take one look at my hospital record and say, you need to go see a psychiatrist. You need to go see a urologist. You need to check for your heart. You have hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Do you know that? And they were telling me about all these things that it's not that I forgot about. It's just that I saw bigger. I saw beyond it. And so they kind of went, they fell back into me. I didn't push it away any longer, integrated it almost into my whole being. I had to convince the doctors, but she wasn't having it. She sent me to go see a psychiatrist. And by the end of the first talk, he was like, have you ever thought about being on this side of the desk? And I was like, no. And then I had to go spend 3 days at the cardiac center in the town that I live. And the chief cardiac surgeon came down and met with me privately. He wanted to know what happened. I said, I think I died. He said, I think you did too. He said, don't stop what you're doing. You keep doing what you're doing. Don't stop. After the 3 day of testing, they checked all the boxes. And then I began working on getting my son home, and he's home. He's back here.
That is so heartwarming. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. And so here in Hawaii, I want nothing more than to remind people all that they are. And that's deep within them. That's this exquisite humanness. And it's unique. It shouldn't look like anything. And so I just been doing that since 2014. Not a lot of people listen to me, because I was in my car. They kind of thought I was crazy. But I don't know. I knew it just take time, and they had to, once they see could see that, my son came back. I got my son back, and I'm healthy. I'm no longer have, I have remnants. I have scars of it, but just like a scar, on your hand. It's like a war wound. And that's my story.
Thank you so much for sharing it. If you're getting any value out of this podcast, please hit that like button and subscribe. Also, if you've enjoyed my content before, or maybe you're new here, but you like it, drop a comment and let me know you're here. I would love to get to know my audience. Thank you for listening, and let's get back to the content. What I want to know is, what did your spiritual standpoint look like before your experience versus after?
Excellent question. Before, I was a sinner. I was raised Catholic. God sat up on this cloud, with this lightning bolt punishing me. And every single ailment I had inside of my physical body was a punishment for my sins. It was very much separateness. I had no concept how just exquisitely entwined, entangled we all are. There's these beautiful people that know there's something more, and people say that they're seekers. They had so much more than I did because I didn't know that there was any more. I didn't know. I had no idea. So that was my spiritual standpoint. Yeah, that's such a beautiful question. That's where I was.
So you said you woke up on the forest floor, right? How soon was it that you realized that you had had an experience that was unusual?
Right that moment.
Yeah, so it didn't take like time for
No.
it to like come back or anything. You just immediately knew.
Right that moment. It was because I could see energy. The thing that got me the most, I wrote it in the book. It was a rock. Of course, trees, and you will think that all these things have sentient life, but it was a rock. I call it electromagnetic plasma. Like it was just beautiful. Kind of like when you look off in the distance, like if you're walking or you're driving on Highway 90 in a summer day, and you see like waves coming off. It was like that, but it was right there and it didn't disappear. Even my car, my steering wheel, everything had energy, and I was super excited. And I remember messaging my daughters and telling them there's never going to be any more problems. Everything's okay. Everything is okay just as it is. And I said, money's not going to be a problem anymore. Money was never a problem. They kind of thought, Mom, you're kind of crazy. I just got excited about everything, everything, even a candy bar wrapper. And so, yeah, it was a definite shift, huge.
This just reminds me of how Pocahontas said everything had a spirit, like every rock.
Oh, I love that. I was talking to my daughter yesterday. I sent her a picture, and she's like, Mom, you look like Pocahontas.
Love
My hair
that.
got so
Yeah. How long did that last? Do you still see energy like that?
Wow, 4 years.
Wow.
It was interesting because there was a time where I knew I was embarrassing my daughters before Sophia's accident. And I would get so excited, and then I get like so excited because I could see something. And they're like, Mom, don't. Like, okay, so in the middle of trial, Sophia was still with us, and we had a recess, we had a break, and the opposing party was sitting by herself at a table. And I was looking at her, and I could see her energy, and I can tell when somebody's sad. Because the energy looks different. And when they're okay, the energy is more expanded and it moves this way in an upward motion. And but her energy was kind of concentrated a little bit lower in my heart because she's part of me. Even though she was trying to keep my son from me, she's still part of me. And there was compassion that was in me because I saw how broken I felt, how lost and alone I felt. And when you see that deeply in yourself, I could see that in her. And so Sophia right away said, Mom, don't. And I said, I can't help it. Mom, don't. So I went over there and I put my hand, I said, do you want to come and sit with us? Would you like to sit with us? And she like looked at me, she goes, no. Okay. I don't know. I had to do that. But yet then intellect took over and I was like, of course, that's probably a conflict of interest or something there. She can't sit with you. I saw somebody hurting and I wanted to help her, no
Yeah.
matter where she was or what she was doing. So yeah, it lasted until 2018, until I left this island and I went to the UK. Then I came back and I can see it if I sit and I expand my awareness. And we actually take people on experiential journeys, helping them to find this because you can do it too. Everybody can. It's just we're so busy up in our intellect. Yeah, it's called the holality experience. And we help people experience that. They can in turn help other people.
So was it sensory overload? Like, was it hard to get used to that since it didn't go away?
No, because if I hadn't had that expanded experience, if I hadn't known that we are source humany, the cosmos in human form. Had I not seen that, it would have been sensory overload. But I could integrate it because I'm like, oh wow, this is it. This is our whole human experience. This is what it means to be wholly human with a W, not a Catholic, holy, but a wholly human. Everything made sense. So it wasn't. It was like there was room in my human vessel to hold everything. So it wasn't sensory overload. I get really excited and I would apologize to the girls. Sorry if I'm embarrassing you. They kind of got used to it. And now Sophia's with me and Sinclair's used to it. My daughter that's still here in physical form. She knows I'm crazy.
She's embraced it. We've all embraced
Yeah.
it. So, do you think that it didn't necessarily go away? You just figured out how to access it by choice.
Yeah, absolutely. The interesting thing, so like when I am busy with work and doing this and all of this to-do stuff, that is when the expansiveness sort of contracts. There's a naturalness to the expansion and contraction because we're nature. You see that in all the seasons and the cycles. We have this intrinsic rhythm also. The interesting thing is when we are more busy on a like a work project or something or writing a book, you kind of look out and you don't see it. I don't see it as much. But when I take some time off, I remind myself that we are the cosmos humaning. And I remind myself that each and every human experience that we have is enriching source, is God enriching himself. The gift of intellect is such a gift. It's so important. But sometimes if we can just slow down a little bit, bring our awareness, more into our heart, then that's when the expansion begins. And know and honor that we have this contraction and expansion, and honor that we are these amazing humans, you know, with every bit of us, all that we are. We're amazing. And there's going to be times that I still have Sophia cry days, you know, because I can't give her a physical hug. Before she was in her fatal car accident, I stayed with a friend who drove for a living, and I was able to stay at his house. And I actually put a, it sounds so crazy, I don't tell many people, but I actually made myself a little bedroom in his laundry room. His laundry room was quite big and it was dark. And I was having so many experiences. And I think this was necessary for me to experience this. I could go to these other realms. I went back. It's like I went through a black hole. These black holes to these beautiful, amazing realms. There was no people. There was sometimes a humanoid or maybe an essence or a presence, but it was so beautiful. And then since Sophia's accident, I would go back to visit her there. I call it green, or green or blue, because there's colors. They're different colors. They have these different hues. And so I would go to purple. Closest to a physical experience with her, kind of like in the green or blue hue. I know that sounds so crazy, but she would kind of manifest into a more of a physical form where I could give her like this hug. It's the sensation of it was like a hug. And I remember asking her and talking to her after her accident in bluish green. I said, "I'm with, you know, with this non-phonetic communication." I said, "I'm worried about your dad, you know, your father. I'm worried because I have the gift of this experience. And so I know you're okay, but he doesn't." And so I kind of remembered the me prior to my 2014 experience. I had to have that experience in order for that to happen and not die and not physically leave the earth. And so she brought me to him, and we had to go through a base of a tree. It was so interesting. Again, it's like a download. Like I knew exactly what we were going to do. And I remember being disappointed because we had to go through the base of a tree and I'm claustrophobic. And so interesting how this carried on over there. And so I was like, ugh. And so she was like, "It'll be short, Mom." And again, these weren't words. And so we'd go through, and then we're in this more like, I want to say yellow green hue. I could see my ex-husband and his wife and their two kids, and then my oldest daughter all there sitting having dinner. Oh, so amazing. Like it was a canal, like they were in Italy. And I remember looking at them, I was like, "Oh, he's okay. He's okay. He was laughing, he was smiling, he was," and my oldest daughter was there. And I looked at Sophia and non-phonetically asked her, "Can they see me?" And she was like, "No, we can see them, but they can't see us." And so after that experience, I told my oldest daughter about it. And she's like, "Mom, you saw us. We were in Vegas and we were at this restaurant sitting next to the canal." And she sent me a picture of it. And I was like, "Oh my gosh." Still, I'm like, "I can't believe that." But yeah, I can believe that. I always have that little battle with myself. I can't believe that's happening. But yeah, I can't believe that's happening. This is so important, Nilla. So what I gathered from that experience that I could clearly see them. I even sat down next to them. And I remember going, "Can they see me? Can they see me?" I sat at the table with them. And she was like, "No, we can see them, but they can't see us." And so that realm, it's like a rainbow. The energy or the frequency just above where they were, we can see them. We can experience them. We can observe them, but they can't see us. They can only see where they are and lower. And that's the same thing because the other realms disappeared. That's what I want to share is if they get a sense that their loved one that has passed on is there, they're there. They're there. It's like right here. They're a lot closer. There isn't really a veil. There's just frequencies. It's like tuning into a radio. All the other radio stations are still there in the airways, but when we tune into it, you can hear a different frequency. And so when we're tuned into this physical realm right here, this is what we see, we experience. But when we sit and we tune into something that may be just outside, you know, just a little bit quicker moving frequency, we can begin to experience other things or have our awareness placed there and just be open to that they're there. We're never ever alone.
That's amazing. Would you say it was an out-of-body experience that you had, or like a vision, like still embodied?
So this is the interesting thing, is I fell into myself, and it was like the deeper you fall into yourself. So I work with people around trauma because I was like a walking education for myself. And what I experience is the more that we push away inside, the more contracted our energy, our frequency is. And so the more we go in and work through what we may be attempting to resist, the more expanded we are. And it's like, okay, so say there's energy, everything that ever was, there's all these potentialities right here around us. And if we're kind of contracted, then we can't really tune into a bigger potentiality. But the more we become expanded, they open up to us. So they're here, and we become expanded by going within. I know that sounds so crazy, but that was my experience. Fell into the cosmos as the cosmos. The safety inside expands, and then you're open to it. I didn't leave and, see things from an observation. I became the cosmos. And I think that's the ticket, that's the key, because we walk around in these physical bodies wanting to be elsewhere. We walk around and with these scary things going on outside and inside, and we want to push it away and avoid it and alienate it. And that really kind of keeps us more solidified, more particleized.
It reminds me of a book that I read that was talking about ego constructs being developed as a result of exiling parts of ourselves. We do that because of things that we're taught, things that we learn are acceptable, and we want to be liked and we want to fit in. Our egos will craft these masks in order to better fit the narrative that we have been inundated with.
Yes, I call it like you are a beautiful, unique familiarity. That's the only way I can explain it, is that we all come from the same source, but we're meant to be unique. We're meant to be different. So we can't be like anybody else, nor should we. And that's where we start to get into trouble wanting to live a paint by numbers life. This is acceptable. That's not acceptable. 99.999999% of the humans on this earth are carrying trauma. I'm writing a book about it, and it's going to be a holistic, with a W, book. I just want people to understand that they're beautiful and they're unique and they're meant to be unique, because that births our contrast. And in that contrast, it enriches our human experience.
Absolutely. And I feel like our society generally is growing in awareness of this concept.
Yes.
I mean, especially too with the growing awareness of neurodivergence and
Yes.
trying to normalize certain aspects of neurodivergent tendencies in order to allow these people who aren't disabled, they're just different, to integrate in society in a way that doesn't require them to constantly mask everything that they think and do. And that's kind of more on the extreme, I mean, even neurotypicals are doing a lot of masking too. And I think that the more emphasis that we put on the importance of authenticity, like I've seen a bunch of social media content talking about how authenticity is even more important than love.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, to me was pretty shocking because I felt like we are literally made up of love on some level. Like our inherent essence of our souls are love, right?
Right.
And so to me, like that meant, okay, love is the most important thing. And then to hear from multiple different sources now, it's becoming a pretty popular concept that authenticity is the most important. And I think that
Right.
that makes sense because you cannot love fully if you are not being authentic.
Right. And authenticity is an emergent process. It's an emergent property. I like to call it non-dualistic sublime love. There isn't anything that it isn't. It's non-dualistic sublime love. And we are love having a human experience. We are love humaning. And the people miss that humaning part.
And that is unique. That is contractive and expansive and gritty and blissful. It's everything. That is the human experience. And we are love humany. That's the message I want people to understand. And so understanding that there is a safety, and then being authentic emerges from that space. Because you can't just be authentic, because that's scary. I couldn't. Hell no.
That's why we have masks, to protect ourselves from that
Yes.
discomfort.
So understanding that and knowing that it's okay, and that's what I want to share. And I want to hold space for anybody who's having a fearful experience. That's it. That's it. I know that when I drive downtown and I see those homeless people, I see them. I see all that they are. I know that they're so contracted, resisting and pushing away parts of themselves, that it becomes so painful that they need to reach for something to soothe their pain. They have these adaptive measures that they take, and then before long, it becomes this adaptive measure that they can't put down. And it's just pain. It's what it is. And so honoring our uniqueness, that we have to be unique. There has to be contrast. There has to be contrast. Then you're like, say, okay, so I can be authentic because I'm supposed to be authentic. I
Yes.
am this non-dualistic sublime love. I am love humaning. I'm love authenticizing.
It's even a word.
Is now. So I did have another question. You help other people tap into that.
Yeah.
What does that look like in
Okay,
practice?
well, okay, so this is really important. We can have insights around it, but we have to embody that insight. And so we kind of have to honor the space within us, gritty, and it seems like the grittier it is, the richer it is. And so it takes time. I always say it takes time, faith, and patience, but we go within. This is really interesting. Whenever there's something that's arising within you that may be scary, that's a doorway right there. So that's where we begin. That's where we begin. Because again, like, you can't just be authentic. You need to have a kind of cultivate a space within you where the authenticity emerges, and that emerges from a safe space within. The cultivation process, I work with people, it takes about 4 months, 5 months. Every bit of grit that we are holding in our physical body are doorways within. We just need to gently open the doors and go within. And that's not really an answer. Again, you can have insights, but we have to embody that insight.
I think you did answer that question, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was asking what it looks like in practice and to quiet your mind, to go within. And then anytime something surfaces that could feel scary, like lean into that and explore that specifically until
Right.
you've wrapped an understanding around that that embraces the idea that it's okay. And there's
Yeah.
no reason to be afraid of that. And then
Right.
it's in embracing that and integrating that new understanding that then in turn would help you to live life more authentically. I get that.
Yeah. Honor the body and that it's a process, and you describe the process. Because I fell within, and that was such a key that I need to share. So I fell within here. It's not a like a higher level place that you want to get to. You go here, you get there actually from going within. It's this beautiful vessel with everything.
I think that's so interesting and different from like a lot of near-death experiences that I've heard, because people will disembody. They
Yeah.
will leave their body behind and have an experience similar to yours, where they travel at unimaginable speeds away from Earth into the cosmos, whereas it's almost like you were able to transport there a different way. Like you went to the same place, but instead of up and out, you went inward and still ended up in the same place that they do,
Yeah.
which I think is very thought-provoking. It's like our heart is a portal.
I know. Yes. We forget about these beautiful physical bodies, this exquisite This is it. This is why we're here. This is this beautiful process, this process, and it's enriching source with every single step, breath, word that we speak, take, you know, everything. And yes, you nailed it.
Well,
Absolutely.
and they say to open your heart to connect with God, and then they allow Jesus into your heart.
Yes, the kingdom of heaven is within.
The Kingdom Within is the book that I'm currently reading right now. It's
Oh,
amazing you just said that.
wow. Oh my gosh.
Synchronicities.
Yes. I have something for you.
Yes.
I've been watching The Chosen, and Jesus says something. Oh my gosh, it made me sob. He says, I have to go get right within my heart so that I may continue. And he keeps going out, you know, by himself to get right within his heart. It made so like a huge impact on me. Before I used to say it because I had to say it. I didn't make any sense to me, but I think it's called the Lord's Prayer, like Our Father who art in heaven, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. And then on earth,
As it is in heaven.
but heaven is right here on earth as it is in heaven. And that's what he's doing. Every time he goes, he makes right in his heart first so that it may be on earth.
Yes, absolutely.
So I sobbed during that part. I think I rewound it and then I had to share it with people. And it's so interesting because I find, since my experience, I find scriptures like the kingdom of heaven with is within. And the thing, repent, is an old archery term. It just means to turn around. Sin means you're off the mark, sinning, and then turn around, look within to heaven. It's inside, and we are whole, you know?
And I think that
Yeah.
that's something that a lot of near-death experiencers get a general understanding of, like the insights that they get on their journey. However, I feel like because of your unique experience, this perspective is more rich in really understanding ourselves.
At a very young age, Carl Jung inspired me. After diving into some of his writings, I learned that the key to understanding others is to first understand yourself. That parallels what we're talking about here. I dove into myself, into my psyche, and tried to understand, like, what was it in my upbringing that caused me to react or respond to certain things the way that I did? And it was in that journey of self-discovery, of discovering what was on the inside, that gave me the tools to navigate in this world. So this kingdom within is something that was so integral to the development of my young mind and who I am today. So I feel personally connected to your story specifically, and it makes perfect sense to me. I just find it so interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I was kind of judging myself until I got to Hawaii, and the chief surgeon said, I think you died. You had sudden cardiac death. Because I was like, mine didn't look like anybody else's. I didn't see my long lost loved ones. I didn't see Jesus. But I think I saw God. God is that beautiful ocean of source that births us. Like, God is here. We're like God in human form, we are expressions of God.
I mean, he's omnipresent.
Yeah, I know.
If he even has a gender, God is omnipresent and within all things, and it's the most pure expression of love, and
Yeah.
if God is love, and God is in all things, love is in all things,
Oh, right. I know.
and that's why I believe that we are made up of love.
We are.
Because I believe we are made up of God.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And in this human experience, in this grit, in the contractions and expansions, the ups and the downs that are necessary, inevitable, but necessary for this human experience, we enrich God. That source, that love is enriching itself via our human experience. So honor it, honor it, hold space for it. Sit with it. It's okay. I ran from it forever, ever and ever. And in those darkest places, in those darkest places, that is where the light shines the brightest. That's where the light is birthed from the darkest places. honor those spaces and know that you're okay. You're always okay. You're never alone. You're never, ever, ever broken. Ever.
Kelly Sammy had a near-death experience. She said something that made an impact on me. During her experience, she was told, just breathe and don't resist.
Oh, yeah.
And anytime after her experience, anytime that something overwhelmed her, she would have that, it would pop into her mind, just breathe and don't resist. Just
Beautiful.
experience. Just experience and recognize that there is no good or bad.
Oh, no, there isn't. I
Yeah.
know.
And that these
That.
things that we experience that are perceivably bad
Yeah.
often shape us in a way that we wouldn't take back.
I know. I know. That Kelly, that whoever, whatever spoke to her and said, breathe, that's so beautiful because breathing is honoring that human experience. When you breathe that long out breath, it opens your heart. Technically, scientifically, it does. It's something that ancient cultures have been doing for the millennia. But that breathing slows down the heart and it expands it. That's beautiful.
Accessing the portal within.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so
Oh,
much. Thank you so
you're
much
welcome.
for being
Yeah.
here and sharing your unique insights with all of
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for having me and for messaging me. I was so excited to hear from you.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. If you loved this episode, please consider leaving a review. If you're listening on YouTube, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe so we don't lose each other. And just share the link with somebody who can appreciate this message. Blessings to you all, and I hope to catch you on my next episode.